Oh, listen to that ice. Listen to that ice.
Oh, man.
That ice is the product of not three, not four, but five sound checks.
Where, no, I think four.
Okay, but the solution...
You're always exaggerating.
I exaggerate a little bit, but I'm not exaggerating when I say that the solution turned out to be... Turn whoop, whoop. The... No, whoop. We always think whoop, whoop is the answer to everything, but it only sometimes is. Well, yeah. All right. So we're getting ready. You know, I'm getting my notes together.
You have to introduce yourself. All right, we're formalizing
fine.
Okay,
sure. My name is Simca Fisher. This is my husband, Damian Fisher.
Why did you emphasize husband like that?
I was...
Is this a... Are you trying to tell me something?
No, I was making sure everybody knew what was going on. It's sort of like when you're blinking.
I think they know what's going on.
Okay. Well, just before we started recording, actually before we did the five sound checks.
Four.
All right. Sure. I'll compromise. It was four. He says, are you ready to go? Are you ready? Like, no, I'm still reading my stuff. No, I'm still practicing my poem. And he's like, okay, let's go. And I said, don't rush me. And he says...
I wasn't trying to rush you.
I was just trying to make you go faster. So,
but and I was being honest.
Yeah, and it worked. So here we are. Aren't you glad? Hey, Damien, do you ever feel unmotivated at work?
Any of my employers listening?
No.
I'm
pretty sure actually nobody at all is listening. Nobody who is an employer or an employee of any kind is listening right now. I know.
It's the shut-ins. Judge Judy didn't come on today. Hi, everybody.
Judge Judy is listening, I bet. This is where she gets all her information. Anyway, they did a study, Damien, which was published in the September-October issue of Child Development. But as we know, children are just, you know, short people, and everything that's true for children is true for you anyway.
I see where this is going.
No, it says, want to make your young child have the gumption to work on a boring task? Dress it up, or rather, dress him or her up as Batman. Because apparently, it says Bob the Builder, Rapunzel, and Dora the Explorer work too, apparently, but that's, I don't believe that was one
no
of those
one,
footnotes.
No one works better dressed as Bob the Builder.
I don't think so. That's like, I think this is like in the Amoris Laetitia footnote, where it's like...
Leticia Adams?
No, that's the part... You know what? I was going to make a joke, but we'll just skip it.
Oh, no, go. No,
forget it. It wasn't a very good joke. The point is that once you're dressing up as somebody else, you don't feel like your same old stupid self, and you can stick with stuff because it's not really you. I skimmed a little bit, but in my experience, that is exact. Like, if I'm at a conference or something, and I'm wearing, you know, nylons, and I'm wearing high heels, and I'm wearing lipstick, and I did something to my hair other than, like... look in the mirror and sigh, which is how I normally do my hair. I can talk to people. I can hand out business cards. I can take business cards, and I don't just like sort of absentmindedly put them in my mouth and start chewing on them. Like I pass myself off as a professional, and I can maintain this for hours at a time as long as I have high heels on, which is my equivalent of being Batman. Yeah, it's good to know. We're gonna move along, aren't we?
Do you want to
hear about somebody else who was motivated? This was pretty much my favorite story all week.
Okay.
22-year-old hanging out with a bunch of his friends. I don't have a lot of background on the story, but somehow or other they got the idea that it would be a good idea to make a mold of his head, like a full head mold of his head.
Sure.
With cement.
Okay.
And they're like, "Well, how are we going to do that?" And then one of them was like, "I know. We'll use the microwave."
No, were they using it as like a mold, or
like they didn't have a bucket. It was like the only thing in the apartment that his head could fit in or something.
Wow.
So they went ahead and they got, you know,
that must have been a pretty big microwave, right?
They it's bigger. Yeah. Bigger than ours. Anyway, you know, they make some pretty good size. Maybe he had a small head.
Maybe he had a small head.
Maybe
yeah.
he had a small brain. Damien, it's possible. So for some reason, he couldn't get his head out of the cement in the microwave, which is, you know, who could have possibly predicted that this would happen? And so they had to, you know, they had to call the fire station and had five firemen there. They had worked on it for a good hour and a half before they decided to call emergency.
Oh, gosh.
And I'm wondering there was one guy in the room that was saying, don't call yet. I got this. And I'm wondering if it was the guy in the microwave or one of his friends.
I want to know how many guys were there. I'm guessing more than two.
Yeah.
Because we were noticing today we have two sons.
Yeah.
And they get along pretty well sometimes, and it's nice that they have each other. Mm-hmm. And one son would have been kind of sad
that
in a house full of girls.
Right, because we have eight daughters.
And
as
two
well.
Two boys, it's like, you know, they have someone who speaks their same language.
Right, and they can punch each other for no reason, and they do this stupid thing where I don't even know what it means. Do you want to reenact it?
No, I'm not sure.
I don't think one person could do it. You know where they do that thing where they bow toward each other? Oh, yeah. And they go, Vinta, Vinta, Vinta. And we don't know why they do it, but it makes them laugh. And then everybody gets all upset and throws things at them. And that's why they do it, because it gets everybody all upset. And it doesn't mean anything.
But two boys, I think that's the limit. Three or more.
Oh my gosh, the IQ in the room just drops.
Heads in the microwave if you're lucky.
That was early in the evening, right? Yeah. Like it was just going to go downhill from there.
Right.
Yeah.
If they were successful in that, who knows what else that they were going to try?
Yeah.
So.
No. Yeah. I mean, definitely head. Yeah. That was the beginning. That was definitely. You know, my brother Jacob, who I'm pretty sure is not listening. he was a rare exception of somebody who didn't need other guys to egg him on. Because this was in second grade, I think.
Let's stop here for a moment.
Yep.
Jacob is a employed father.
Oh yeah.
He's a great guy,
he's a
contributing member of society.
Yeah.
Smart college graduate.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anyways, let's continue.
This is a while ago. You know, he sort of took as Dr. Mumbach used to say, took the circuitous route toward adulthood, I would say. And he's in second grade, and they're in those desks that have, you know, the front of the desk is attached to the back of the desk of the chair behind you. So they're all connected together. And he's got himself a roll of that brown paper towel that they use in school bathrooms. You know, that's sort of indestructible.
Only allowed in school bathrooms.
Yeah, and it's like made of asbestos or something.
And like Guantanamo. That's it. It's the only place you can find that.
Right, exactly. So he had a whole roll of it, and he was just fiddling with it. And he noticed that if you twist it, then it becomes, I mean, it's strong as it is, but if you twist it, you cannot tear this stuff. So he's messing with it, and he's got it sort of wrapped around his wrists after a while, and he's messing with it, and he's twisting it, and he's doing this and that with it. And the teacher looks up, you know, Sister Mary Agnes or something. She's just, what are you doing? He's got himself hogtied to the desk with his head between his legs. He's completely trussed up like a turkey. I mean, they had to call the janitor. I think he only did it one time, though. So there's that. He's got, you know, one credit for him. Anyway, boys. Yeah. yeah, so the 22-year-old, I got one short quote from the fireman. He just sort of let them know that there were a lot of other things that they could be doing with their time other than chipping away with a screwdriver at the inside of a microwave. Apparently is welded together, so you can't just like take the back wall off or anything.
Nuts.
It was difficult. It was involved. It was pretty involved. Oh, here's something more elevating, though. I love it. Oh, you got to look up this story because you got to see the pictures of it. Okay, I'm just going to read a short little section here. Director Peter Brosnan and other filmmakers. Oh, I picked the wrong spot. Well, the point is that they're digging around and they found in the desert a sphinx, a previously undiscovered sphinx head.
Which desert?
The California desert.
Ooh, is this like Stargate? Like
no.
The aliens put it there?
No. No, it's not, because that's... Have you seen Stargate?
That's terrible.
That stupid freaking movie.
They wrote that shortly after they got their head out of the microwave.
Yeah, maybe while they were in the microwave thinking, how should I spend my time? I know. Yeah. So, anyway, he was a director in the 80s. He got a $10,000 grant from somebody or other for his archaeological dig, and what he was looking for was the movie sets that Cecil B. DeMille had constructed for his crazy, terrible movies, like The Ten Commandments. Because you remember, it has a whole... They made a whole city.
Yes, they did.
They made a whole city in the desert. And then apparently they just walked away from it. Because in those days, you weren't recycling. You didn't have to do something with your city. You could just leave it. And that's what they did. And it got covered up.
They should have left it there. I mean, they should have...
Well, that's the thing. They said they dug this thing up. And he says, given that these objects have lasted 94 years, which that was...
Wait,
which movie are they talking about?
Well, he made two Ten Commandments. Oh. He made a silent version, and then he made a silent version with Charlton Heston.
Okay, a silent version. With Charlton Heston.
That was a silent movie with words. It was. Oh. Look at the way they're acting.
It's his teeth, starring Charlton Heston's teeth and his and hair. Yeah, yeah, I see what you mean. I see. You know the kids. You know what their favorite part is. The Well, they have a lot of favorite parts. They have a part where he's at the well in Midian, and the girls discover
a man.
Then the part where Joseph is coming home. Where Moses is coming home with all the, I don't know, he's gone around the world and conquered everybody, and the Ethiopians come in.
With Moses. Yes, that part is great.
Terrible. It should be illegal. It's so terrible.
Handsome young prince.
Oh, he's so handsome. And what was the other part, though? With what's the name of the guy? You know who I'm talking about. The sweaty guy. Not Yul Brynner. They were all kind of sweaty.
They're all kind of sweaty. Are you talking to Edward G. Robinson?
Yes, Edward G. Robinson. Boy, do I enjoy watching him. Well, he has one scene where he says, What is the thing about the rats? What's the line about the rats? Here, this is the rat who would be your ears. Not like they have a spy or something, but the way they phrase it is this is the rat who would be your ears. And the kids are like, what? Just like that went through a rewrite and the line stayed in.
No, they didn't go through a rewrite.
Well,
it was Cecil B. DeMille dictating that.
Yeah, it was
shouting for those bullhorns. Yeah. With a writing crop.
That's amazing. They should, they should make movies.
We
like
need to
that
track
again.
Down an Edward G. Robinson movie called "I Was a Communist Spy for the FBI."
Oh.
I think we should see. Just
I was just asking the kids what we should do over Christmas vacation.
And now we know.
Excellent. That could be the rat that would be your ears.
Yeah. Oh,
sure. Why not? speaking of excellent writing, okay, this is the one that we had to. Ugh, now the kids are all mad at us because we had to chase them out of the room to do this podcast. But here's why. Apparently, there's a contest every year for It's the Bad Sex Award, okay? And it's not actually the Bad Sex Award. It's the Bad Sex Writing Award, which awards, you know, you get a prize for the worst erotic writing of the year. And this is
it's usually given to serious books as well.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no. It's not like just erotic novels, but supposedly serious novels that have steamy passages in them. Who won is named, I'm not familiar with him. His name is, Christopher Ballen, B-O-L-L-E-N. Not familiar with this particular author. He looks like a real...
He looks smart.
His lower half of his face is sort of hanging down in an intelligent fashion, and he is definitely looking at the camera.
From his novel, The Destroyers.
The Destroyers.
Which probably took him a good couple of days to come up with that.
I could come up with that.
All right. Anyway, let's read the passage.
All right. Here's I get to read the passage?
Oh, yes, you do.
All right. Let me adjust the microphone, if you will. this is so stupid. I'm sorry. Okay, she covers her breasts with her swimsuit. The rest of her remains so delectably exposed. The skin along her arms and shoulders are different shades of tan, like water stains in a bathtub. But wait, her face and vagina are competing for my attention. Okay, first of all, sir, the vagina is on the inside. That's not the word that you meant. Okay. Anyway, her face and vagina are competing for my attention, so I glance down at the billiard rack of my penis and testicles.
What?
That's what I said. Oh, no. I don't see how that's relevant.
I couldn't help it. I mean, but the billiard rack, really?
You feel like that's what he thinks every time. Like every time he glances down.
I think that came to him at one point in his life, mm-hmm. and he thought it was, no, I've never seen that before. It's brilliant. He probably thought he was like a genius.
Yeah, like, wow, how come nobody has ever made that comparison before? And, he already went through, you know, that could be the rat. That's my ears. No, no. I've heard that. No. Yeah. Edward G. Robinson got that one already. Oh, holy mackerel. Is this this is perfect for Advent. Do you even realize how perfect for Advent this is?
Look, Advent is, we're doing our best here.
Yeah, Advent can take care of itself.
We got most of the kids to confession today, and most of them, the rest to confession next week. And
the priest sighed when he heard my confession. I stopped, and he sighed, and he said, well...
Yeah, I was glad we had the...
I felt bad. I mean, I felt bad in general. Yes, I felt bad, and I felt bad for him, too. And I said thank you at the end, and he didn't say anything.
Gosh, I'm curious now.
Oh, I'll tell you later. All right, here's something. Okay, I'm not going to claim that this is related. Boy, I'm sort of sensing a theme here, though. El Paso, Texas. More than 200 pounds of contraband bologna were seized at the local point of entry Wednesday morning.
200 pounds of bologna?
200 pounds of bologna, yes. A woman is driving into the U.S. around 7 a.m. through the Paso del Norte crossing when she initially told U.S. Customs and Border Protection officers that she wasn't carrying any fruits, vegetables, meat, or any other type of contraband. But they looked under the floor mats of her car, and there they found 200 pounds of bologna. They had a picture, and sure enough, that is exactly what it was.
Who smuggles bologna?
I don't know. Is Mexican bologna any... It was 227 pounds, 23 rolls of Mexican bologna. She was given a $1,000 penalty. Is Mexican bologna good, though?
Never had it.
You can pretend you know that, though.
All right, but I don't eat bologna.
I know.
I haven't eaten bologna since I was 7.
Yeah. Well... CBP is entrusted with enforcing hundreds of laws for dozens of other government agencies, blah, blah, blah. These agencies require that unsafe items are not allowed to enter the United States. CBP officers are always on duty at our ports of entry and assume responsibility of protecting America from all threats.
Like baloney.
Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the baloney. Oh... I have one story here.
At least she wasn't trying to bring in any billiard racks.
Yeah, or bathtub stains, I guess. That could be. Oh, here's one. Oh, my gosh. What is the matter with us? I have another story here. Sometimes these things just sort of declare themselves, I guess. This is a story that my husband sent to me, so I'm going to let my husband tell you about it.
Oh, this is not my fault.
Yeah, but it's your story.
Well, all right, so Pfizer... denies fumes from Viagra factory are arousing the town's males.
Of course, that's what they would say.
Yeah, that's right. It's this town in Ireland where they have a Pfizer plant where they did make Viagra, and everybody in town likes to say that that's what's driving the fellas crazy.
Including the dogs, it says. Which I...
Maybe it got into the water supply. Maybe it's a joke, but Viagra says nope, we're good.
Yeah, they're not. Nobody wants to take the blame for whatever it is the Irish are doing. Basically, is what I've noticed in general.
Oh, you're a racist.
Oh, that's not, the Irish aren't a race. I can't be racist.
Yes, we are.
No, you're not.
Yes, we're a race.
You're a different species, is what you are.
There you go again, being racist.
Well, it was your turn last time. So it was my turn this time. Shall I redeem myself? I have one last story here, okay?
All right, Hitler.
There you go, trying to slow me down again.
Make you go fast.
Yeah. Okay,
are you ready?
I'm clicking on it. Okay. This is a boy. This is what we call a soft landing, I guess. you know, Alzheimer's patients, they want to sleep all day. They shuffle around. They're angry at you. They don't want to eat their Tic Tacs.
They threaten to kill you.
They threaten to kill you, but only because they've been holding it back for 80 years, and now they can finally say it without...
Don't want any more of that goddamn chicken.
she would never say that. She did once threaten, and this was before she had Alzheimer's, she did once threaten to take a skewer. She had a skewer in her hand for some reason, one of those metal ones.
Yes.
And she told my brother that she was going to stick it in his ear and it was going to come out the other ear.
Is this Jacob or the younger ones?
It was Jacob, as a matter of fact. Yeah. See, he's so calm now. He is like soft spoken and mild mannered, and he smiles. He takes care of stuff. Nothing ruffles him. But at the time, he was a little shit. He really was. He was the worst. He was. You've heard the term ankle biter. He was an actual, honest to goodness, literal ankle biter. It was terrible. He just. I don't know how he got that way, and I don't know why he stopped. It was very strange. Anyway.
Seems like a good guy now.
He's a really good guy now. I don't know how many people threaten him, actually. But I no longer live in the same state with him, so I haven't threatened him in a long time. No. Boy, I'm giving you the wrong idea.
He's a
very good guy. Alzheimer's patients. The point is, as soon as everybody's exhausted, that's when they get all riled up and they want to walk around and they have to, like, find stuff and empty out drawers and climb walls and stuff. So they've, I was reading a story, this is in the Atlantic, in Manhattan, they've opened up a night nursing home for Alzheimer's patients so they can do their thing and nobody's going to try and get them to go to bed. They can get up, they can play cards, they can make, you know, imaginary soup or whatever it is that they want to do.
Oh my.
And there are people
goodness.
There who are just working the night shift, just taking care of them at night so their caregivers can get a break.
That's brilliant.
So, yeah, you know, say what you want about the 21st century, and I realize the state of medicine is, you know, sort of a mixed bag, right? We got all kinds of stuff going on, but they have so many, you know, there's nothing that's going to make this disease a good disease. No. But they're working on it.
There are people who can make things good out of it. So
yeah. So I was glad. I'm glad that people think that it's worth accommodating anyway, trying to do their best. If they want to get up and clean the bathroom at 4 o'clock in the morning, that is okay.
Yeah.
And there's about so elder serve at night, it's called. This is in Manhattan.
Wow, that's fantastic.
Oh, it is fantastic. I've got a poem for you, Damien. It's a real pick me up. Are you ready?
Yes. Are you ready? Yes, I am.
All right, it's called The Burden of Humans.
Yeah, you don't have to tell me.
I'm going to move the microphone away so you can just relax for a minute. It's by a poet called Michael Lavers. I'm not even familiar with him. I don't even know where I found this poem, but here we are. The Burden of Humans. The grass just has to wave. The birds just have to sing. The grapes don't wonder what light is. The light just lights them, and the grapes grape back. The golden oaks just shed their summer dresses on the lawn. But you have to read Spinoza in the garden while the light is good. You have to keep your focus as the motorcycles scream out of the purple hills. You have to sweat and laugh and weatherproof the bedroom windows and remember names and dates. The town where your parents met, Milk River or Swan Hills, and when they died. You have to sweep the kitchen floor and then define the good, the true, the beautiful, or try, because azaleas can't see themselves. The squirrels are busy, and the ferns have closed. The frost tattoos its sermon on the rose, but in a language only you can read. You have to know that all things pass and perish, and that what you've said is finite, but continue as if grand exceptions might be made, raking the leaves, stacking the wood, hoping the child falls asleep against your chest, hoping the blizzard swerves, knowing the wreckage of the present will be gathered, but not soon, and not by you, because you're in it, there, somewhere, under the sheet of snow.
That's pretty great.
Yeah. And thus endeth our sexy podcast.
No more baloney.